Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, March 23rd. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California. Beautiful sunny day here, as I will every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm an author, coach, speaker, and consultant, but my real training was as a mom of four and grandma of three. I recently retired from 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels. Throughout my adult life, people have often asked me how I get so many things done or juggle a career, raising a family. As I talked with these people, I began to realize that many people just aren't doing the jobs or living the lives that they want. So many people feel stuck and don't think they have a choice or a way out. Color Your Life Happy began as a blog where I wanted to share ideas about making choices and creating the life you want. I soon had enough material and ideas to fill a book, so my book, Color Your Life Happy, will be published this spring. Creating this radio show seemed like a natural next step, at least to me. On Color Your Life Happy, the radio show, we will be talking about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Our discussions will cover a host of things: living a fulfilling life, following a spiritual path, making wise choices, creating loving relationships that we all want, of course, reducing stress, balancing family and career, bouncing back from adversity, but most of all, being good to yourself. Each week, I will interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, and so forth, all of which contribute to lasting happiness. We've got a fantastic show for you today in which I will encourage you to unearth, dust off, and go after your dreams. I encourage you to call in where you can be live on the air and ask your questions, or even better, share an experience you've had with going after your dreams. If you wish, of course, you can go onto the web chat where you can type in your questions, your responses, and I will acknowledge you there. I see I have a caller on the line, so I'm going to ask the caller to give me your name, where you're calling from, and your comment or question. Hello. Hello there. Uh-oh, that was a shy caller. Okay, I'm going to go on. Let's see if I have anybody over here on the web chat. Yes, I do. Guest number 1275. Guest 1275, who are you? Okay, guest 1275 is shy also. Right at the top of the hour, I want to dispel a myth, because some people seem to think that successful people are happy people are lucky, that somehow or another they follow this straight path from birth to success. And I want to dispel that myth right now. What got me on this idea was I was talking to a friend the other day, and I was sharing with her how I had this lack of confidence and this doubt come over me. And she was clearly shocked that I had any doubt. As a matter of fact, my students often would tell me that I appeared to be completely confident, whereas they thought they weren't. And I had to reassure them that every time I stepped into that classroom, every time I speak, I have to work on building up my confidence just like everybody else. In the pursuit of my dreams, I have had real life experiences just like you all have. I've had my water turned off, my car has broken down, I've had my kids say things like, "I hate you." One time one of my daughters, when she was a preteen, told me, "When you get old, I'm sticking you in a rest home." That's why I work at staying healthy and getting fit today. A few weeks ago, I decided to hire someone to compose a jingle Now, keep in mind, I didn't even have this radio show at this time, although I had thought about it. But for some reason, I wanted to have a jingle. I wanted to have something to play at the opening of my show whenever I got one. When I was thinking of what ideas I wanted the songwriter to include, I woke up with all kinds of doubt that morning. Things were going around in my head like, you've got nerve. Who do you think you are? You can't afford to even pay for a jingle right now. I caught my thoughts and I had to pull them back into what I call a happiness set point and say to myself, that was a serious bout with doubt. If you listen to the jingle at the top and the bottom of the show, you'll hear that line, bout with doubt, in it. And by the way, after the jingle was finished, something in me pushed me to start my radio show. Within 1 week, I've lined up 6 shows, 5 more, counting this one, 5 more. That's the way the universe works. When you step out, help will come. The universe aligns itself to give you what you need to reach your goals. So the thing that separates successful people from those who are not where they exactly want to be is action. It's not genius, not luck, not money. Action. Even when you're not sure exactly what the next step will be. I see I have a question on the webcast. So hi there, Gift Basket Business. Hi, Shirley. I'm going to read her question and then share with you the answer. Let's see. She asked me, Flora, how often do you network outside of your office? And how does it impact on your state of well-being? That's an excellent question. I think every time you're outside of your office, whenever you're interacting with other people, in some way, shape, or form, you are networking. Active networking, especially let's say if you have a business, means that you must always have your business cards with you to exchange when people ask for them, not to hit people over the head with them. But by networking with people, something very interesting happens, especially if they're people that are of like mind, if they are aspiring. It will impact your state of well-being because they're going to share ideas with you that perhaps you didn't think of. They may turn out to be someone that can be a business partner or, if not a business partner, a partner along the way of being happier, reaching your goals. They may have ideas to exchange with you. So the mere fact that you are sharing of yourself, they will open and share with you. And that definitely impacts your state of well-being and continues you moving toward your goal. One of the books that helped me tremendously along the way was a book by Susan Jeffers. Her book is called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. At one point in my life, many years ago, I used to take a day off from work, from teaching. I would get a pot of tea, and I would read that book every year. What I learned from that book was something that helps me to this day, and that is you can't wait for the day when you feel fearless. That's not going to happen. You're not going to wake up and suddenly feel fearless. You have to acknowledge the fear and step out on your goals anyway. Now, you can't wait until your book or your article or whatever it is is perfect before you submit it. You can't wait until your house is perfect before you have company. You definitely can't wait until you're rich before you do whatever it is you think you need money to do. You definitely can't wait until you lose weight, gain weight, grow hair, and so forth. I have to tell you a funny story. The very year that I decided to go and have some glamour pictures done was right around the same time that I was dealing with my mom, who was suffering from dementia, and we had to find a rest home for her and so forth. And I started losing hair in the top of my head. And my beautician did her best to work with it, but I clearly had some thinning of hair up in the top. Well, this is the very time when I'd scheduled to do my glamour shot. I decided I wasn't going to wait. I went ahead and had my glamour shot done. And to this day, I haven't had anyone approach me and say, wow, you look like you were losing hair on that picture. Because they do a great job of making you up. Of course, some people don't recognize themselves from the glamour shots. But I couldn't wait any longer. It was time for me to have those shots done. My hair was not perfect, but I went ahead with it anyway. So I see another question. Let me pause and take a look at that. What area of your life do you believe you practice procrastination most, business or personal? And how do you snap out of it to progress in life? I'm an equal opportunity procrastinator. I procrastinate in business and I procrastinate in personal life. One of the things I procrastinate most is decluttering. I am in serious need of decluttering my bedroom. When I remodeled my house, my bedroom became the catch-all. When my mother died and I moved some of her personal papers and so forth into my house, I put some of the special ones in my bedroom. So my bedroom has become the catch-all. That's the thing I really procrastinate on. How do I snap out of it? Well, when I'm looking and searching for something that I know I have, I can see it in my mind, but I cannot find it. That's one of the times when I know, okay, that's it. You have to stop everything and declutter this mess. Before tax time is another time that I declutter. And I make a vow at that time that I'm going to keep all these things in perfect order for next year. I do a little better, but not as well as I want to. Procrastinating on things like that I don't want to do, like the dishes, for example, I'm very good at ignoring those. I just moved to another room. However, I must say that some things that are distasteful at one time can really be helpful at another. For example, washing dishes is not the top of my list of things to do. However, when I'm stuck on an idea, when I need a break from the computer where I spend a disproportionate amount of my life, sometimes going to wash the dishes is a relief, is a break, and gives my mind an opportunity to retreat and regroup. So some of those things that I put off, necessity makes me snap out of that and take care of those things. And there's a great feeling when you declutter or you clean your kitchen. I never thought I would say this, but there's a great feeling of accomplishment, and it also gives your brain a chance to rethink and to work out things that you just can't get to if you keep churning. I see I have another caller on the line. I'm going to open up the line and give us your name, where you're calling from, and your comment or your dream, your question. Hi there, caller.
Hi, it's Melissa.
Melissa, hi.
Hi. Sorry I joined you late.
Oh, no problem. Do you have a question, a comment, or you want to share a dream with us?
My dream is to actually get a book done
instead of just in process.
That's pretty much it.
So your book is, you want to get a book done. What's holding you back?
Just never seeming to have the time to do it.
Aha. So how much time do you have? I have 24 hours a day. How much do you have?
Yeah, I guess I have the same amount of time.
Really?
but it seems all full of all this other stuff I got to do and clients that I have to stay in touch with. I'm doing all these different things.
How did this stuff get in your schedule? Who put it there?
I put it there, but only after agreement, after they call and tell me how much they need my help. So I count myself.
Okay.
I say, okay.
So most of your time is taken up with your clients, which is your source of income.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And there's certainly nothing wrong with that, because starving is overrated. And it's not fun to not be able to pay your bills, so you definitely have to do that. But if you also want to write a book, then at some point that has to be such a great desire that you decide to set some time aside to do it. Not many people write a book in a straight shot. Most people write it over a period of years, months, a little here, a little there, and eventually they get it done. So it just has to move up into your list of priorities to be so important that you jump up in the morning and it's the first thing you want to get to, even if you can only spend 15, 20 minutes or whatever. So it just hasn't moved up to the top of your priorities yet, and that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. Don't give up on it. Just be patient and kind to yourself and recognize that it's not a failure that you haven't done it yet. It has to move up to your list of priorities.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to answer another question and invite you to stay on the line if you want to add anything. Someone just asked me over on the web chat, where do I go outside of my office to take a breather and generate great ideas to move forward? Mm-hmm. One of the things that helps me tremendously is taking a walk. I've chosen to live in a beautiful neighborhood, and I can take a walk down to the park or whatever amount of distance I decide to, and that helps a lot. What I try to do on that walk is not think about business or anything else except gratitude. I try to make it a gratitude walk, where as I'm walking, I'm looking at the things in nature. I'm thanking God for the fact that I'm in a beautiful neighborhood, and I really work at listening to the sounds and noticing the texture of the trees and the different types of grass people have planted and so forth. So that helps a lot, because somewhere in the process of that walk, I get new ideas. By the time I get home, they're popping out of my head. Also, just getting away and doing things that I like to do often give me new ideas. I love to go to plays. I love to go out to dinner with friends. I love to travel. So all of those things help me a lot. Now, when I'm working on projects, such as writing my book, I sometimes find that grabbing my laptop and going down to Borders Bookstore or to the library are very helpful, because they change my location. And when I change my location, then, of course, I get different ideas, different perspectives on whatever I'm trying to do. And even though the Borders, for example, in their coffee shop can be sometimes a little noisy, but I often got great ideas from watching people interact in there. What were you going to say something, Melissa?
No, huh?
Okay. Someone just sent an idea for you through the web chat, and they suggest dedicating about 20 minutes a day during the strongest part of your day, that is, you know, whatever is your best time, morning, night, whatever, to work on your book. And don't try to write it in chapter order. Just write things that come to your mind to get you going. Does that make sense? Yeah, so if you're a morning person, I know I'm a morning person.
Like, oh, my gosh, that seems like it's not enough.
Yeah, the 20, no, you have a computer. You know how to use it. Tell us what you do. Tell us about your business a little bit, Melissa.
What I do is computer software training. So, and my book, I have two book projects going on, but one of them is computer related, and it's PowerPoint for realtors. So I'm teaching people how to use PowerPoint for their specific needs.
Okay. So in your business, you definitely have access to a computer, and you definitely can take advantage of snatching small times during the day. But that top of the morning, if you're a morning person, is just ideal. I've discovered that there are times when I'm on the computer at night trying to finish up a project or something, and I just reach a point where nothing is working, is not making sense, because it's too late. And that part of my brain that can figure things out is tired. And if I will go to bed and not think about it, the next day the problem has typically resolved itself, because I'm a morning person, and that's my best time of day. So certain things I can't do at night. Some activities I can do at night that don't require a lot of thinking, but dedicating, just finding and making it a commitment, you know, making an appointment with yourself. when you make an appointment with your clients, you show up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I was just checking. When you make, I know when you make appointments with me for lunch, you always show up. So, when you make an appointment with yourself, show up. Keep your appointment with yourself, because this is all about acknowledging what you have to share, and it's important. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Let's turn to talking about dreams and how to go after them. Ask a young child what they want to be when they grow up, and most of them can tell you right away. When my granddaughter was about 5 years old, she said one day that she wanted to be a pediatrician and a country girl. And I said, a pediatrician and a country girl? Exactly what does that mean? And she said, you know, I want to be a pediatrician who goes from country to country helping people. Even when children don't have the words to express what's in their hearts, they have ideas. Now, what about you, all of you on the call? What do you want to be when you grow up? Now, some of us followed a childhood dream. Some of us put that childhood dream aside, maybe because someone told you you couldn't have it. And then there are others who changed their minds. Maybe you changed your mind along the way, and you went in a better direction. But like so many, there are just too many people who have buried their dreams to work on a job they hate. Sometimes this happens because people just don't believe that they can have what they want. Today, I want you to find that dream and go after it, because your happiness depends on it. If you aren't doing what it is you love, if you aren't feeling fulfilled, then you're cheating yourself of the happiness you deserve. Now, there's been a lot of research lately, people doing studies about happy people. They found that happy people have a number of things in common. I know you're not surprised to know that they look at the positive sides of things, but they also engage in work they love. They enjoy close relationships. They typically believe in a higher power. They also help others. Now, many of these things come together. For example, if you're engaging in work you love, you probably are helping others. You probably are also enjoying close relationships. You definitely are taking responsibility for your life. So what I'm asking is, what do you want? What does your ideal life look like? I want you to visualize yourself doing what you enjoy, something that's deeply fulfilling, that gets you so caught up in it that you forget the time. If you aren't living that life right now, how can you move toward it? Well, if you were able to visualize this dream, then you've already taken the first step, because you have something in mind that you know that you would enjoy doing. If you have trouble visualizing yourself having what you want, you probably don't believe you deserve it, or someone convinced you along the way you can't have it. Now, we're all prone to fear. Going after a dream, doing anything new, is scary. Here's what Marianne Williamson, the international spiritual leader, spiritual teacher, here's what she believes blocks us. This is a quote from her book, A Return to Love. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine, as children do. We were born to make manifest the glory of God that is within us. It is not just in some of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. So I say to you, achieving your dream, whatever your goals are, it's not just about you. It's about the rest of us. You have a gift to give us. And by not achieving your dream, your goal, you're withholding this gift that you were sent to the world to give. Norman Cousins said, the tragedy of life is not death, but what we let die in us while we live. And this is what I am very concerned about in my book and on this show, is encouraging all of you to not let this die within you. I have another question on the webcast, if I can see it. And it is, retired on an island, that's what I want to be when I grow up. Well, Miss Retired on an Island, why aren't you on that island then right now? You can take your laptop, but they may not have Wi-Fi. So you've got to think about all the things that go with that. I saw a show once about an island. Matter of fact, you can buy islands, as you know. But the couple that had bought this house on the island were having a lot of difficulty. Whenever it stormed, whenever they had could not get away from the island to go to the mainland for supplies. So whatever your dream is, be sure to think about all the different sides of it. Now, this particular caller on the webcast says, to get there, I'm focused on setting my business in place so that administration and projects are on automatic. She says, it takes time to put it together, but I'm worth it. She also says, the book quote is terrific. Most of us underlive our dreams rather than blossom and transform the world in a positive way as we can. Absolutely true. Now, ask yourself whatever is blocking you, each of you listening in on the line, from having the life you want, from giving your gift to the world. Then make plans to remove these blocks. Well, how are you going to do that? One of the ways is to hang out with people who are doing what you want to do. So it's because if you want to soar like an eagle, you've got to stop hanging out with turkeys. You can put yourself around others in many ways. You can join associations, return to school, apprentice, and so forth. This reminds me of a joke I heard about monks. Let me share this with you. Three monks decided to practice meditation together. They sat by the side of a lake, and they closed their eyes in concentration. Then suddenly, the first one stood up and said, I forgot my mat. He stepped miraculously onto the water in front of him and walked across the lake to their hut on the other side. When he returned, the second monk stood up and said, I forgot to put my other underwear to dry. He, too, walked calmly across the water and returned the same way. The third monk watched the first two carefully in what he decided must be the test of his own abilities. Is your learning so superior to mine? I, too, can match any feat you two can perform, he declared loudly, and rushed to the water's edge to walk across it. He promptly fell in the deep water. Undeterred, though, the yogi climbed out of the water and he tried again, only to sink into the water again. He climbed out again, and yet, again, he tried, each time sinking into the water. This went on for some time as the other two monks watched. After a while, the second monk turned to the first and said, do you think we should tell him where the stones are? By hanging out with people who have achieved what you want, they know where the stones are. They can help you. And it's so important to be with those people. Now, it would be great if we had been encouraged as children to follow what we love. Greg Reed, the author of The Millionaire Mentor, tells a story about a time when he was participating in a charity golf tournament in Las Vegas, and he was there to celebrate the life of the late dancing legend, Gregory Hines. He had a chance to speak to Gregory Hines' father, Maurice. He asked Maurice, what was it about Gregory's upbringing that made him such a leader in his art? Well, yeah. is like this, began his trial. Father, all we did was watch what he loved to do and then encouraged him to continue doing it. You should have seen his eyes light up when he was only a child, dancing for the family. When he held a ball in his hand, he didn't share the same passion, so we simply took it away. That's it? Reed asked in a surprised tone. Yes, just as simple as that, he replied. You see, so many people try to push their kids into doing something they themselves want rather than supporting their children in doing what they want. This is what Maurice Hines said. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful if all of our parents had taken this view and pushed us toward things that we already showed a love for? Well, unfortunately, that didn't happen to most of us. So now it's your responsibility to push yourself. And to do that, you've got to surround yourself with people who can support you in your goals, who are on the same wavelength. There's an old saying that we are the five people that we associate with the most, and our income is an average of those five people. So think about that for a minute. The five people you associate with the most, those are people you're like. And you take their income and average it, and that's your income. So it doesn't take much guessing to think that if you want to increase your income, what do you need to do? You're going to need to affiliate with people who have the income you're aiming for. Another thing that you can do is to give up trying to go it alone. Barbara Scheer is the author of a book, Refuse to Choose, Wishcraft, and some other inspirational books. She says isolation is a dream killer, and she's absolutely right. You must surround yourself with other like-minded people who can help you, who can give you suggestions, most of all can give you encouragement. Now, keep in mind I said like-minded people because it is, in my view, dangerous to share your ideas with people who are not on the same wavelength, because they're going to pull you down. They're going to discourage you. They're going to tell you you can't do it. And, you know, we're already pretty good at discouraging ourselves, so we don't really need help from anyone else. We need help to encourage. Even the Lone Ranger didn't really work alone. Think about it. He had a sidekick. You need someone to support you and to encourage you along. Zig Ziglar, the motivational speaker, said, you can get wherever you want to go if you help enough other people get where they want to go, and I truly believe that. Another thing you must be willing to do is whatever it takes. You must be willing to do whatever it takes to get where you want to go. You're going to have to block those negative thoughts and words, just like palace guards. You got to be a palace guard, a gatekeeper, or better yet, Wonder Woman. Remember Wonder Woman with her bullet-deflecting bracelets? Only accept thoughts that you want to have, the thoughts of the way you want things to be. Let me give you an example. A couple of years ago, the year before I retired, I decided to remodel my kitchen and family room. I was not happy with the configuration, and I wanted it to be to my liking before I retired so I can relax and enjoy it. Well, of course, I started my research, and I talked to people who had remodeled, many, many people, and not one of them had a happy story to tell me. Every one of them moaned and groaned and said, oh, my gosh, remodeling is such a pain, and each one proceeded to tell me their sad stories about remodeling. Well, I listened to them, but I only let the good advice they had come through. I did all my research until I was satisfied. I trusted that I would find the contractor that would be right for me, and I did. I ended up having my kitchen and family room finished in exactly 1 month. And why did I have this experience? Because I decided I was going to have that experience. And even now that it's over, people say to me, wow, you must have had quite a time remodeling your kitchen. I said, I did. It was wonderful. I had a great experience. And I'm the only one I know who says that about remodeling. So I decided that I was going to have a good experience. I blocked the negative thoughts, kept the great ideas, and therefore it manifested. Now, you do have to think when you're proceeding towards your goal, but you don't have to know everything to get started. The most important thing you need at the start is a strong desire and a willingness to take action. Now, your dream goal could be more than one thing. Some of us are kind of stuck because we think we have to pick just one thing and stick with it. Barbara Sher stresses in her book, Refuse to Choose, that you can do many things. You don't have to stick with just one thing. As a matter of fact, you can change your mind if you no longer want to do whatever and change to another direction. I was attending a floral design show one year, and this international award-winning floral designer was creating this gorgeous European-style design, and he explained as he was working on his design that he was a dentist, but that he loved floral design so much that he also decided to do that. And as a matter of fact, he belonged to a very select group of designers who had special honor, and there are only a couple hundred of them in the world. He explained that when he was growing up, his father was a dentist, and his father expected his son to follow in his footsteps. So he did. He became a successful dentist. But he also loved gardening and floral design, and he decided he would do that too. So he makes an equally profitable and fulfilling career in floral design. So there are a number of people who, and I'm a good example, who cross, I call it straddle the fence, of doing what it is they want to do. So you don't have to stick with just one thing. Hold on, I think I have another caller on the line. Just a minute. Hello, caller?
Hello.
Hello. Give us your name and number.
This is Flora Brown?
Not number. This is Flora Brown. Now, who is this?
This is Matt Anderson.
Hey, Matt Anderson, how are you?
I'm fine.
Welcome. We're in the midst of talking about going after your dream. Do you want to give us some input on a dream you're going after, or you have a question or something?
Well, I don't know if your audience knows, but we've obviously met before,
yes.
I just wanted to tell if there's anything I might share with the audience, it's that your perspective is just one of the neatest and most unique ways of dealing with the world that I've come to learn and know and appreciate, and I think part of going for one's dream is is appreciating the notion that to do that you have to actually dream, not be afraid to dream, and actually acknowledge and be about the business of going, wait a minute, there's something out there that is there for me. My mom used to say, you can't hit the moon if you don't shoot for the stars. So there's something
exactly.
Very, very, very positive about all of us recognizing that within us is all. Yes, there are external limits and part of the living consequences having to do with the fact that there are things external to myself that are preventive, that prevent me from possibly being able to achieve certain things. But that should never stop me from wanting to and actively making the choice to go out and try to do those things, because if that happens, then I'm self-limiting. When there's nothing more deleterious to the human spirit than being like the chicken, where you know you put a wire screen up in front of the chicken and then it doesn't cross it, and then after a while you move the screen and just draw a line, and the chicken won't cross the line. It becomes self-limiting. And often our lifestyles are such that we don't recognize it, but we end up limiting ourselves. And there are enough external things out there to do that for us not to add to that admixture by being limiting ourselves. I think we should take both an attitude of gratitude and a willingness to go out there and try, you know, an openness, try anything and go for it. I don't mean that wildly, and I don't mean that irresponsibly, but I mean that with all the verve and all the lust that has to do with really going out and finding out what do I want to do and how do I go about doing it, and if I don't know, then let me investigate and ask others who do and have this lust for life, this joie de vivre, as they say in French, that has to do with wanting to go out there and do it.
Wow, thank you, Matt. That is so true and so fantastic to have you share that with me. Yes, Matt and I met at a seminar in beautiful Laguna Beach, and it was fantastic. It was fantastic. I want to add to what you just said about the chicken, because I don't think many people have thought about the elephant, for example, how an elephant is trained, and it is so symbolic of the way that we are often raised, and that is, when you see a circus come to town and they have this parade down Main Street, the elephants will hold on to each other's tails and march nicely down the street without causing any havoc. And perhaps you've often wondered, I know I used to wonder, why don't those elephants just break loose and run away? Well, it's because when they were little elephants, baby elephants, the way they're trained is to be tied to a very tall post. And when they're young, they pull and tug trying to get away from that post because it's the natural instinct to want to run free. After trying for many times and not being able to free themselves, they decide that it's just impossible. Once they decide that, as they grow bigger and bigger, the trainer can use a smaller and shorter post. So if you've ever noticed elephants tied at a circus or wherever, they can tie that rope to a very short post. If that elephant wanted to, he could easily break away and escape. But by the time he's a full-grown elephant, he really thinks that that small post now is holding him in place. And he contributes to it by staying there. Little does he know, he could escape any time he wanted. So we are raised in similar fashion in that many times we are presented with limiting beliefs by our parents, our teachers, our society. And if we accept those and don't break free of that and go for our dreams, then we'll be like the elephant. Here we are with all this power and this ability, and we're limiting ourselves now. The outside no longer needs to limit us. We do the job ourselves. And that's sad.
I was going to ask. It's really interesting that you say that, because I was going to ask, especially for women, because I think it becomes the post becomes different. I was going to ask you what you thought, especially for women, the cultural posts tend to be, because I'm watching as I grow older and watch society develop, if you will. I'm watching what seems to be a lot of limitations that I'm seeing a lot of people impose upon themselves, and I was just wondering what you think are some of the, if not natural or organic, what do you think some of the guideposts are that limit us early on? You mentioned one, which is the culture itself.
Well, one of the problems for women, I believe, especially women who want to go into business, is the idea that women are nurturers. We're natural nurturers, but we also have been groomed to believe that we must approach everything with a soft, gentle approach, which is great, except that it becomes problematic when you're in business and you have to ask for your money. So one of the things that women in business have to do is to recognize that what they do, even though we come from this nurturing, caring side, is worth money, and being willing to ask for what we deserve in terms of being paid for our services, being paid for our products. I think that's a big block for women. This kind of stay home and take care of your children, have children and so forth, is another problem. It's not as prevalent as it used to be, but there is a problem now with the idea of the superwoman. I think that when women move out into school, careers, and so forth, some people say, great, go right ahead and do that, but still keep the house clean and still cook and so forth. So some women, some of us, get into being a superwoman. And that's problematic, because then you start burning the candle at two ends, and you know what happens when you do that. So those are some of the things that I think block women. But I think this whole thing of nurturer versus business, tough businesswoman, you know what they call women in Hollywood who become producers, directors, and who speak their minds. You know exactly what they call them, right? And this is one of the... I beg your pardon?
The B word.
The B word. And so this is a problem that women will face when they are in charge, when they do speak their minds. I think it's been a problem and it's an ongoing problem. I can tell you when I was in the doctoral program that I was in the doctoral program for 4 years. The second year of my doctoral studies, I had a baby. I had my third child. My son was born the first day of school of the second year of my doctoral studies. And even though I was prepared in terms of I was signed up for my classes, I had everything in place, but I did not want my professors to know that I just had a baby, because I knew, this is back in the 70s, I knew that they still believed women should make a choice. You should either be at home or you should work, not both, and definitely not trying to go to school and have babies. So when I called in to let the professors know that I would miss the first day of school, I talked to their secretaries. I did not say, I just had a baby, I'll be late starting class. I said instead, I've been hospitalized, and when my doctor releases me from the hospital, I will be in class, so please don't drop me, because you know professors can drop you if you're absent the first day.
Yes, I remember that.
But I knew that they would be prejudice toward the idea of me having a child and trying to do doctoral studies. So I just withheld that information from them, but they didn't need to know, and I finished my program just fine. Does that answer your question about women?
Well, actually, I want to throw something in, if I may.
I don't want to be too
aggressive. I just got here late, and I'm enjoying the conversation. But I just wanted to share with you. I also did some graduate study, both at Northwestern and then transferred from there to MIT as a political scientist. And I remember once having a woman walk up to me, a graduate student who was interviewing for a job, and the professor there had written that somewhere in her letter of recommendation to her job, I think she was going down to Yale, he wrote that she's a good political scientist for a woman. And so I'm African American. I have a black mother, and we tend to have a different sort of orientation towards lots of feminist issues if you're trained well. And so I immediately went to a colloquium and I said, excuse me, but I'm sort of concerned about this. I'm, you know, one of your two students who's responsible for selecting undergraduates with five professors and two graduate students here to find out who's going to come to this program. And what do I tell an undergraduate female who's coming here when she recognizes that somewhere down the line on her recommendation, she's going to have someone say she's a good political scientist for a woman and not just that she's a good political scientist? Well, you know, in this old boy network, especially with this upstart young lion black male talking smack, that didn't go over very well. But in point of fact, I think, and this gets to my point, I think one of the problems that we're having at that level of culture for women, and I focus on this because I think it's important to do so, one of the problems is that there are not enough of mother's sons who have been oriented to the point of actually defending their mothers and sisters. Not that you need me to defend you. Don't misunderstand me. Women are stronger than we are, and I've done the research to prove that. They're smarter, and anyone who's done the good research knows it. But in point of fact, it's never going to change if we don't have some males getting out there saying, wait a minute, some of this behavior is inappropriate. We should not be limiting our mothers and sisters, and thereby ultimately it'll free it up for all of us, and we'll all stop doing these things that prevent us from being able to find our quintessence, to find the essence that is ourselves.
Well, I love that. I'm so happy to have you say that it's important for sons of mothers to defend that when they hear that, because it does take away from, it's like taking the compliment back, that you give it and then you diminish it. And it shows that there's still that mindset in not just in that person who said it, but in many people's minds, that women have stepped out of their place when they achieve, especially in areas that they don't think women are suited for, or just they haven't historically been involved in.
Yeah, non-traditional areas.
Right.
I was going to say again, though, that just shows our limitation, because here's where education is important. Anyone who's done a long history graph, 7.8 million years of human history are really what we're about. Take away religious principles for a moment and just know what anthropologists know. And only in the last 50,000 years have we been civilized. All the time before that, we, like every other monkey, 212 monkeys that were alike, followed the food, and we've been nomadic until 50,000 years ago. And 50,000 years ago, we stopped that. We became civilized, or Swiss city dwellers, because women invented agriculture. We know these
mm-hmm.
things, but they are not mm-hmm. common knowledge amongst the culture, because that's why they call it his story. History is his story. Males, once they took over, women used to run the planet until about 50,000 years ago. Excuse me, women mm-hmm. ran the planet until about three or 4,000 years ago, actually. But once, history is always revisionist, and once males took over the dominance of the planet, they stopped acknowledging to us that, as a matter of fact, I think it's in the Old Testament, where it's the Song of Ruth? I think in the mm-hmm. Old Testament, the reason the Song of Ruth is there, but everything else in the Old Testament has all this about Moab and Jedediah and all these male names, the reason the Song of Ruth remained the Song of Ruth and didn't become the Song of Matthew is because they couldn't do it lyrically. They couldn't change it up. They could change the female names, but they couldn't change the Song of Ruth. it's like trying to say James Brown became the Song of Engelbert Humperdinck. It just doesn't work. women should. I was just going
to
say, so
women, a lot to think about.
Well, women should know this. It's really important.
Yes.
And excuse me for being a guy talking women. I don't mean to undertake over your show, but I'm just going. If there's one thing that always enlivens me. It's not watching another guy go, okay, I'm going to go off to my job. The biggest decision I'll make all day is what color socks to wear, and I'll make $150,000 a year. That's not important. What's important is when I walk into an office and I see the outer office with all the windows is the guy tapping his pencil and trying to think of what to do, but the inner office is where the women, usually secretaries, but the women are getting the work done. And for those of us who are really interested in doing it right, my mom taught me to be the best I can be, and so I want to watch the people who are the doers. And in every situation, whether it be work or home, women are doing it, no question about it.
You gave me an idea for a future show, that's for sure. Well, our time is about up here today, and I want to urge all the listeners to think of one long-held goal or dream that you have, and it can be a small thing. Sometimes we think our dreams have to be something big, like climbing a mountain. It doesn't. Something big is great, but think about something you wanted to do. It may be a small little thing, and then I want you to do it. You don't have to do the whole thing. You want to make one little step toward it. Your time is now. This is your time. This is the time for you to step forward. The mere fact that you've tuned in today, it means that you're seeking and there's something in your heart calling. There is no such day on your calendar as someday. I want you to go take a look on your calendar. There's no day called someday. There's only today. And I want you to share your gift with the world, because we're all waiting for you to share that gift with us. That's it for our show today, and I want to thank all of you for tuning in. I want to take this opportunity to remind you to visit my website, www.coloryourlifehappy.com, where you will learn about my book. You can learn more about me. And if you choose to purchase the book before it is published this spring, you will get it at a discounted price, and you will get it autographed. So that's got to be cool. But even if you don't do that, I want you to still visit the site, because I have freebies there. I have wonderful things for you there. Take a look. Next week, Monday, March 30th, 11 a.m. Pacific time, my guest will be Catherine Tull. Catherine Tull is a psychotherapist. She's an author and a consultant, and she's going to share her own personal story of domestic violence and how this has led to her program of empowerment and healing. She has a program where she talks about, she's going to have teleclasses called If Love Hurts, and we all know that love shouldn't hurt. So she's going to be on the program. You'll get to listen to her, ask her questions next week at the same time. I'm your host, Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy, the show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I will every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I want to encourage you to have a blessed week and to remember to color your life happy.
Thank you, Flora.
Thank you, Flora.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Bye.